I Capture the Castle by Dodie Smith, dramatized by Jane Rogers.
I write this sitting in the kitchen sink. That is, my feet are in it. The rest of me's on the draining board, which I've padded with an old blanket in the tea cosy. I can't say I'm really comfortable, and there's a depressing smell of carbolic soap. But this is the only part of the kitchen where there's any daylight left for me to write my journal. The view through the windows above the sink is excessively drear. Beyond the dank garden in the courtyard are the ruined walls on the edge of the moat. Beyond the moat, the boggy ploughed fields stretch to the leaden sky. It's comforting to look away from the windows and towards the kitchen fire, near where my sister Rose is ironing, though she obviously can't see properly, and it will be a pity if she scorches her only nightgown. Rose looks particularly fetching by firelight because she's a pinkish person. Her skin has a pink glow, and her hair is pinkish gold. Although I'm rather used to her, I know she's a beauty. She's nearly 21 and very bitter with life. I am 17. I'm no beauty, but I have a neatish face. My plan is to capture us all and our lives here in the castle. Our father is lurking in the gatehouse where he hides away day and night reading detective stories. Mother died 7 years ago. And now our stepmother Topaz has come in. She's a famous artist's model with masses of hair, so fair it's almost white, and an extraordinary pallor. She claims to have been christened Topaz, but there's no law to make a woman stick to a name like that.
Topaz, when are you going to London to earn some money?
I'm not, Rose. It costs too much to live there, and two of the men I sit for are abroad. I don't like working for McMorris.
Why not? He pays better than the others, doesn't he?
So he ought, considering how rich he is. But I dislike sitting for him because he only paints my head. Your father says that the men who paint me nude paint my body and think of their job, but that McMorris paints my head and thinks of my body. Mm. And it's perfectly true. I've had more trouble with him than I should care to let your father know.
I should have thought it was worthwhile to have a little trouble in order to earn some real money.
Then you have the trouble, Rose, dear.
Oh, I'm perfectly willing to. It may interest you both to know that for some time now, I've been considering selling myself. If necessary, I shall go on the streets.
You can't go on the streets in the depths of Suffolk.
Rose, you're the last girl to lead a hard-working, immoral life.
If you're really taken with the idea of selling yourself, you'd better choose a wealthy man and marry him respectably.
And how am I to meet a man to marry, wealthy or not, shut up in a crumbling ruin, surrounded by a sea of mud?
Out of the sink, Cassandra.
Oh, I just wanted to finish my sentence.
We need to think of some money-making plans. I could offer to give a lute concert in the village.
That's the last lot from the old log pile.
Oh, Stephen, could you pump up some water, please? Whose bath is it tonight?
Mine.
Yes, ma'am. You'll be spoiling your eyes, Miss Cassandra. Have a candle.
A lute concert is not the answer. Can we be serious? Cassandra, give me a page of your notebook.
Well, I've only got 12 left. Can't you find a scrap somewhere?
You can write on the back of this bill.
Ah, good. Right, sit down, everyone. I am going to make a list of our income and expenditure since January.
Income?
Right. Topaz?
Well, nothing.
Nil. The same for father. Nil. Thomas, being at school, nil. And the same for...
Oh, this is silly. None of us has any income. The last income was £20 from selling the tall boy.
But there's no furniture left to sell, in case you hadn't noticed.
At least we're not paying rent.
No, but we still owe it. Old Mr. Cotton's nephew may be more keen on getting it than he was. The vicar told me they're on their way from America now.
I could get work. They'd have me at Four Stones Farm.
But the garden, Stephen. The vegetables are only...
I'd work in the garden in the evenings. So you could put me down for 25 shillings a week, Miss Rose. And I'd get my dinner at the farm.
This book's first rate. I'm having a little break, trying to guess the murderer. I should like a biscuit, please.
Oh, shall I put some margarine on an oat cake, Mortmain?
And sprinkle with a little sugar. Makes a change. So, what's the game? Earnings. Topaz nil. Father nil.
Thomas nil. Cassandra nil. Rose nil. Stephen Colley, 25 shillings a week. And is Stephen giving us his wages?
I ought to pay for my board and lodging, Mr. Mortimer, sir. And for past favours. All the books you've lent me.
I'm sure you'll make a very good head of the family. I borrow this plaid rug.
Or stay by the fire for a little while. Mortmain?
Written in bed. I can't stop thinking about Father. Years and years ago, he wrote a very unusual book called Jacob Wrestling, a mixture of fiction, philosophy and poetry. It had great success, particularly in America, where he made a lot of money lecturing on it. He was supposed to begin a new book when we settled into the castle. But we've been here 8 years now, and no book has appeared.
Oh, blow, my candle's finished. Thomas? Thomas?
What?
Can I have your candle?
Nope, still doing my homework.
Who's there?
Only me, Stephen. I'm just getting a candle end.
Miss Cassandra.
Oh, it's all right.
I want to ask you something. I want to know if you're ever hungry. I mean, when there's nothing for you to eat.
Well, there generally is something or other, isn't there? I mean, it would be nicer to have lots of exciting food, but I do get enough. Why did you suddenly want to know?
I was lying awake thinking about it. I couldn't bear you to be hungry.
Oh, Stephen.
If you ever are, you tell me and I'll manage something.
Thank you. But look, you're going to help us all with your wages anyway.
Yes, that'll be something. But you tell me if you don't get enough. Good night, Miss Cassandra.
Dark enough. Rose, can you help me wring them?
You've dyed the roller towel green.
Try not to rip all over the floor.
Oh, look how pretty my nightgown is, Cass.
Is there anything else that we can dye?
My handkerchief.
Oh.
I see what you mean. Turning things green really does make one feel rather godlike.
Three women with green arms.
This rain is amazing. Oh, the lane will be like a river.
Well, let me add to your simple pleasure in nature's violence by reminding you that there will shortly be at least 6 glorious new leaks in our roof.
I've just asked Stephen to take a couple more buckets up there, Father.
It's not my fault that we live in a ruin.
Do you like Stephen, Cassandra?
Of course I do. But I wish he wouldn't give me poems pretending he's written them.
You should tell him you know he copies them. Encourage him to write something of his own. And be very matter-of-fact with him, my child. Even a bit on the brisk side.
I think he'd take briskness for snubbing. And you know how fond of me he's always been.
Hence the need for a little briskness.
I don't see what
you... Oh, Cassandra. He's a handsome lad, isn't he?
It's like Noah's flood out there. The very minute I left school, the heavens opened.
Oh, Thomas, you poor drowned rat. Get out of these things and I'll bring some dry clothes upstairs.
It's my turn for a bath, but if you'd like it, Thomas.
I've had enough water for one day, thanks.
Are there any spare saucepans? The attic is like a sieve.
Once the dyeing is finished, Stephen empties the tin bath and rinses it for me. We carry it to the fire and Stephen bails hot water from the copper and helps me make a screen of clothes horses with green sheets on.
What will you have to read tonight, Miss Cassandra?
Volume Bis to Cal of our old encyclopedia, which I've just re-borrowed from the vicar.
I've got something for you.
Oh, chocolate! A whole tuppenny bar! How did he come by that?
On credit, on the strength of my job. I know you like to eat in the bath, Miss Cassandra.
How delicious. But won't you share it?
Oh, no, miss.
The rosy glow from the fire turns the green sheets on the clothes horse a fascinating colour. I lie basking thinking about Topaz who has passed through the kitchen in rubber boots and oilskins and disappeared into the rain. I would take a bet that she has nothing whatever on under her oilskins, and she intends to stride up the mound and then fling them off. After being an artist's model for so many years, she has no particular interest in nudism for its own sake, but she has a passion for getting into close contact with the elements.
Come in!
Anyone home?
Whoever you are, I warn you, I'm in the bath here behind the clothes horse.
Good heavens, I do beg your pardon. I'm Simon Cotton. My brother and I turned down your lane by accident, and now we're stuck in the mud.
We'll have to get Stebbins' horse to pull it out.
This place is magnificent. It's a castle.
Just let me get dried and in my right mind, and I'll show you round. Could you pass my towel?
I can't see where it...
I'll just peek through the sheets.
How do you do? Ah, here it is. There's no need to look so scared. I'll put it down where you can reach it and go right back to the yard.
Oh, I'm not scared, but you don't look the way you sound. I didn't think you'd have a black beard.
Ah, I've been looking for you everywhere, Simon. This is the darndest place. I've just seen a spook.
Nonsense, Neil.
Honest, I have. While I was in the lane, I shone my flashlight up at that tower on the hill, and a white figure flitted behind it.
Probably a horse.
It was walking upright. But gosh, maybe I am going crazy. It didn't seem to have any legs.
Stop talking about it anyway. There's a child in a bath behind those sheets.
Please, could you pass my clothes? I'll reach down the clothes horse for them.
My God, it's a green child. What is this place, the House of Usher?
I'm not green all over. It's just where we've all been dying.
Ah, then maybe it was one of your ghosts I saw.
Don't worry about the ghost. Of course, he didn't see one.
Well, he easily might up on the mound. But it was more likely my stepmother communing with nature in her boots.
A legless stepmother? Have you a sister who plays the harp on horseback or anything? There she is.
It's not a harp. It's a lute. Now that really is amazing. A castle? A lute?
Look, Cassandra, Topaz has given me her old tea gown.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, I'd better come down. It's a bit long.
Oh, let me lend you a hand.
Good evening. We are your new neighbors. I'm Simon Cotton, and this is my brother, Neil. I couldn't believe this kitchen was real. It was like a woodcut in some old book of fairy tales.
It's real enough. I'm Rose Mortmain, my sister, Cassandra.
And do you own this castle?
No, you do. We rent it from you.
Oh, it's bloody weather. Sorry.
Rug off your head.
No.
My father, James Mortmain.
But oh, this is a miracle. James Mortmain? You must be the author of Jacob Wrestling.
Why? Yes.
Neil, you remember Jacob Wrestling?
Yes, of course. He was splendid.
It was the most fascinating modern book on the entire syllabus. Huh. You would not believe the hours we spent as students arguing and analyzing and always finding something different, something new.
I'm glad to hear you say so.
And when may we expect the successor to that great book?
Never.
It's only 2 days later, but they've come to visit again. I'm in the barn because Rose and Topaz were madly cleaning the house in the hopes of more visits. And no sooner had I got comfy on my pile of chaff than Simon and Neil walked right past into the house. Topaz said last night that she's sure Rose had made a hit. Oh. Oh, they're coming out of the castle already. What's gone wrong?
They obviously haven't set. I suppose one can't blame the poor girl.
One can blame her for being so darned obvious. We shall have to drop them, Simon. If we don't, she may put you in a very awkward position.
I suppose so.
Maybe we didn't see the child again. She was a cute kid.
A bit consciously naive, don't you think? I shall feel worst about dropping the old man. I'd rather hoped I could help him.
Topaz! Topaz, what went wrong?
Come further down the garden. I don't want Rose to hear.
I heard the Cottons saying they have to drop us.
I'm not at all surprised. Rose behaved insanely.
She made a dead set at Simon.
You mean she was too nice to him?
Not exactly. She was terribly affected. She kept challenging him. If she'd had a fan, she would have tapped him with it and said, "Fie, fie." Oh. And she fluttered her eyelids. It would have been fetching 100 years ago.
Oh, poor Rose. She's got it out of old books. She thinks it's how women behave. Shall we tell her?
Not unless we ever get invited to Scotney. Then we'd need to kick some sense into her.
We won't get asked.
I expect it's because we're so poor. I was nice to them, really I was.
Perhaps too nice.
I was charming, but I was capricious and contradictory. That's what men like, isn't it?
Maybe they prefer you to be just natural. Mm. Something must have put them off, because their mother has invited just about everyone else in the village to visit them. Mm. We haven't even seen them for...
6 weeks? Oh, I don't want to talk about it.
I regret to say there are moments when my deep and loving pity for Rose merges into a desire to kick her fairly hard. For she is a girl who cannot walk her troubles off or work them off. She is a girl to sit around and glare. Topaz is wonderfully patient. But I sometimes wonder if it's not only patience but also a faint resemblance to cows. The only person who really upsets Topaz is Father.
Topaz, what's the matter?
I thought the visit had started him writing again. But I've just sneaked into the gatehouse while he's over at the vicarage and... What do you think he's working on? Crossword puzzles!
Might there be money in puzzles?
Not that kind. They didn't make sense. What is the matter with him?
Is it... Might he be drinking some kind of alcohol you can't buy? I know there's something called wood alcohol.
Oh, don't be idiotic. You can tell if men are drinking. We must be patient. It's just that he's a genius.
What are you painting?
Your father's portrait. Can't you tell?
The picture is mostly orange triangles. But perhaps that's because he never sits for it. Topaz bathes her eyes, then puts on her favourite dress, which is cream satin damask, Italian, just about dropping to pieces. She wears a little ruby red cap with it. Then she goes down to make potato cakes for tea. After tea, a telegram arrives, saying that Father's Aunt Millicent has died and left Rose and me her personal wardrobe. She was 74 and an eccentric dresser, but still, to be left anything at all gives one a lift. The prospect of a day in London is heaven, but the problem of what to wear is sheer hell. We end up wearing our old white suits, which Aunt Millicent made for us herself, just before the row about Father marrying Topaz. She has, of course, cut him out of her will entirely. Sadly, Aunt Millicent's clothes are heavy dark coats and thick woolen underwear. After we've packed them into trunks, we have to go to a shop where her furs are in storage.
I didn't even know she had furs, Rose. She thought they were cruel to animals.
Furs are worth money. Maybe they'll be sables.
They'll probably be rabbit.
Everyone's staring at our awful suits. Oh, Cass, we must be the only girls in London in white.
The perfume in here. Mm. What does it smell of?
Heaven.
These are yours now. The men are just bringing them in.
Oh. Whatever animals were they?
Well, this coat is beaver, and the jacket is sealskin.
Let me try the coat.
You look like a bear.
It is bear. Oh, dear me, I think it must have been a coachman's coat.
It weighs a ton. Could we sell it to the shop?
No. I'm sorry, we don't buy furs.
On the train home, it is cold, and I wear the sealskin and Rose the bear. They are oddly comforting. But then disaster strikes.
Rose,
I've just seen Simon Cotton near the guard van.
On this train?
Yes, you ninny. We won't be able to avoid him when we get off. Let's be distant.
Distant? Do you think that I intend to speak to him after they've ignored us?
We can say good evening coldly and sweep on with dignity.
But can't do anything with dignity, dressed in furs like hearthrugs. We should jump out of the train as it stops and dash away before the cotton see us.
We can't dash away without our trunks. Stephen will be waiting for us with the card. Oh. Let's get out the wrong side of the train and walk along the line to the guard's van. By the time we get there, the cottons will be out of the station.
All right. Well, we might as well keep the furs on. These white suits will be horribly visible in the dark.
Come on, I'll pull you up.
Now, where are ours? Oh, look. Oh, no. On this trunk.
Yes, sir. A trunk and a travelling case.
Quick, behind the trunks.
Crouch lower, you're not hidden.
They'll never see us.
I'll drag it to the door. Oh, my God!
Oh, Rose. Oh, Rose, he saw us. Rubbish, why would he slam the doors on us? No, it's something else. Shut up, listen.
I tell you, I'm certain, Simon. Oh, come, sir, I've been sitting in that van, but she left the doors open.
What is it?
Shh. I have a flashlight from the car. Tell Mother to stay inside with the door shut.
Oh, what are you doing?
Oh, it's a milk churn, Ash.
Haven't I fed them in Yellowstone Park?
Rose. Rose, you've been mistaken for a bear.
Oh, the idiot. The idiot. Ow. What? Where are you going?
Come on, quick. Out the back again.
Oh, Rose, don't be a fool.
If you don't come with me, I will never forgive you. I'd rather die than explain.
Oh, Rose, wait.
Rose, please wait. He wants to escape from the circus.
A bear.
A bear. Oh.
Heading.
What's that, man?
Be careful, it's hellishly dark out here.
They can be really vicious.
Oh, I've got a pitchfork.
Stephen, stop.
It was in the cart. I won't hurt it unless I have to, Miss Cassandra.
I'll head it into a barn. Give me that horn.
Station lantern.
Stop. Let them come off the lead.
Rose, it's my sister. It's my sister. He's killing her.
Rose. I won't hurt you. Why are you running away?
I don't want to meet you or your brother either. You can both go to hell.
Ow! That hurt!
Oh, Rose!
Miss Rose, all the people on the train are after you.
That's your fault, Neil Cotton. You've made me the laughingstock of the neighbourhood.
But why on earth are you dressed up in that?
Oh.
All right, Simon. We'll pretend that there really was a bear. Take off that coat, Rose. Stephen, could you,
I'll hide it in the ditch and come back for it later.
Stand back, please. She's had a dreadful shock.
Rose.
She's all right, but we want to get her to our car. Can you manage, Neil?
She's as light as a feather.
The bear, sir.
Dead. My brother killed it.
Are you sure, sir?
Well, we better have a look.
She's all right. She's all right. Right.
No, it won't. It fell in the river and was carried away by the current.
Didn't have a chance.
Oh, killed first and drowned afterwards, and I dare say it was valuable.
Come with me, Cassandra. We'll give you a ride home in the car.
Thank you. Oh, our trunks are still in the guard's van.
So are ours.
An invitation to Scotney comes promptly the next day. Topaz has set about making Rose an evening dress out of some pink muslin she's been saving for a special occasion. Rose will wear a crinoline under it. I can wear my old school speech day frock.
Couldn't you have a new sash, Miss Cassandra? Hmm? I've got some money saved.
My sash is as good as new, thank you, Stephen.
Do you like the cottons?
I hardly know them.
Would you call Neil handsome?
Not really handsome. Not in the way that you are, Stephen.
Seems a waste when I'm not a gentleman.
Don't talk like that. Gentlemen are men who behave like gentlemen.
You can only be a gentleman if you're born one, Miss Cassandra.
Stephen, that's old-fashioned nonsense. And will you please stop calling me Miss? You're one of the family. It's absurd you should ever have called me Miss. Who told you to?
My mother.
Oh.
I remember the first day we came here. You and Miss Rose were throwing a ball in the garden, and I ran to the kitchen thinking I'd play too. Mother called me back. Told me you were young ladies, and I was never to play with you unless I was invited. And to call you Miss.
Stephen, how awful. Please,
Please just use my name.
I will, Cassandra. Shall we go for a little walk?
All right. Oh, no, I don't think I will, Stephen. I have some more ironing to do. It's now 4 o'clock. I've been trying to sort out my thoughts. I wanted to go on that walk with Stephen. And I think I thought that if I did go, he would kiss me. The way he looked at me made me feel quite dizzy. But what I realise when I'm really severe with myself is that I don't reciprocate his feelings. I need to follow Father's advice. I will be brisk. Mrs. Cotton sends her chauffeur to take us to dinner at Scotney. Besides us, the vicar and a couple of distant relatives, the Foxes, are invited. I've wanted to go inside that beautiful house for so long. It has a smell of flowers and beeswax, sweet yet faintly sour and musty. A smell that makes you feel very tender towards the past. It is a wonderful dinner with real champagne, which is like very good ginger ale without the ginger. But I'm nervous because the knives and forks are so complicated. I think of copying Neil, but his table manners are quite strange.
Mother thinks I ought to eat in the English way, but I'm darned if I will.
What is the difference?
Oh, well, look, you cut up a piece of food, lay down the knife, change the fork from your left hand to your right, eat the fork full, change the fork back to your left hand, and pick up the knife again.
Oh, but that takes so long.
When this house was built, people used daggers and their fingers. And it'll probably last until the days when men dine off capsules.
Father, fancy asking friends to come over for capsules.
The capsules will be taken in private. By that time, eating will have become unmentionable. Pictures of food will be considered rare and curious, and only collected by rude old gentlemen.
Mrs. Cotton starts quizzing Father about when he will write a new book. If any of us addressed him like that, he would bolt. But he's quite gallant and teasing with her. They talk for ages. And Rose and Simon's heads are bent close together, deep in conversation.
Neil, what do the Foxes do?
Well, Aubrey's an architect, and Leda's a photographer. Well, he's very smitten by your stepmother, isn't he? Oh. What is it?
Oh. Two faces staring in the window. I shall go and tell
them. Oh, it'll be people from the village. Let them watch if they want to.
Simon, Simon, don't catch them.
Good heavens, I'm not going to hurt them. Anyone there? They're behind the cedar.
Please say you couldn't find them. It's Thomas and Stephen.
Oh, they must have slipped over.
Thomas, Stephen, where are you?
I told you they'd see us.
Come on, both of you. It's perfectly all right.
Cassandra, I'm so dreadfully sorry. I know it was a terrible thing to do.
Nonsense, Stephen. Nobody minds a bit.
What? Ah, my old friend Stephen. Are there any bears aboard tonight?
I don't want to come in, please.
I do apologise for them. They ought to be ashamed of themselves.
Oh, don't mind your great Aunt Rose, boys. Come on, we'll go raid the icebox.
I wish I could go to the kitchen with them, but the ladies head up to Mrs. Cotton's bedroom. And after that, we descend to the hall to dance to music on the Victrola. Leda Fox disappears to the kitchen, which I think dreadfully unfair. And I'm even more furious afterwards when I find out that she's persuaded Stephen to pose for some photographs in London. She's going to pay him 5 guineas. Topaz is cross as well, because Father and Mrs. Cotton were so busy chattering, he didn't even notice Topaz trying to get him to dance.
Great heavens, Cassandra, what are you carrying?
A ham.
What?
Neil gave it to us. I was trying to hide it in case you made me refuse it.
Refuse it? You must be insane, my child. Pass it here. Let's see how much it weighs. It must be £14 at least.
Thank you.
You were nursing it as if it was your firstborn child.
I doubt if anyone's firstborn child is ever more welcome.
Simon's attracted. I know he is. But he's probably been attracted to lots of girls. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to propose.
Oh, Rose, have you thought what marriage really means?
Yes, I thought tonight when we were looking at the paintings. I suddenly imagined being in bed with him.
Well,
How did it feel?
Most peculiar. But I could face it, Cass.
Is it just the money?
I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not. He's the first person who's ever made me feel I matter. And he's handsome, in a way, don't you think? If I could just get used to the beard.
Are you sure you wouldn't rather have Neil? He's so kind, and he has such a nice, clean face.
Neil? No, you can have Neil.
I wasn't thinking about me.
If only I could get Simon to shave. Anyway, what does it matter? I'd marry him even if I hated him. Cassandra, did you ever see anything as beautiful as Mrs. Cotton's bathroom?
Yes, lots of things. And no bathroom on earth will make up for marrying a bearded man you hate.
I don't hate him. I like him.
Perhaps you won't be sure of your feelings until you've let him kiss you.
But I can't do that before he proposes, or he mightn't propose.
That may be a mite old-fashioned. Anyway, I shall pray you really fall in love with him. Mm. And he with you, of course. Mm. And I'll do out-of-bed prayers.
Oh, so will I.
Did I startle you? I had a bet with myself I'd get up the hill without your hearing.
Well, you did, Simon. But I wasn't asleep. Have you been having a good time in London?
Oh, yes. I love London. But it seems a waste not to be here in this weather. What's that? Lessons?
Oh, heavens, no. I left school last year. Oh,
I do apologize, Miss Mortmain. Is it a story? Read me a bit.
It's my journal. I've just finished writing about Scotney.
Do I come into it? I'll give you a box of candy if you let me read a page.
All right.
You've swindled me. Is it in your own private code?
More or less. Though it did begin as real speed writing. And I've been getting it smaller and smaller so as not to waste paper.
I was reading the journal in Jacob Wrestling again yesterday. It's odd to remember how obscure I found that part when I read it at 16. And by the time I came to do it in college, it seemed perfectly intelligible.
It's extraordinary to think of people having theories about father's work and studying it in college thousands of miles away.
Do you have any theories about why he's not writing?
Because he went to prison.
When did he go to prison?
Ages ago, before mother died. He was discussing something with her in the garden, and he had a cake knife in his hand. Our officious neighbours thought he was attacking Mother and tried to stop him. Father ended up spending 6 months in prison. And I don't believe he's written a single thing since.
He should be psychoanalyzed.
Can you explain how that would work?
Well, the trouble may lie much further back than those few months in prison. But prison may have brought it to the surface. Maybe another period of imprisonment would resolve it.
But who could imprison him?
I don't know. And if he consented to it himself, he wouldn't really feel imprisoned. I'd so much like to write about him.
What sort of thing do you write?
Oh, critical essays, mostly. Your father'd be a superb subject if I could find out what monkey wrench got thrown into his works.
It would be even better if you could get the monkey wrench out.
Listen. Neil's picking me up at the Godsend Inn at 12:15. Be a nice, companionable child and walk to the village with me.
We wander down towards the barn, and he tells me how he visited Scotney as a child and fell in love with it, though he never imagined he would inherit.
Cassandra, can you make your father understand that I don't mind at all about the rent? I'd like him to know I'm honored to have him as a tenant.
I'd call him more of a guest than a tenant.
Do it tactfully. Don't make me sound gracious and patronizing.
There's a right kind of patronage, you know. Perhaps Father will dedicate his next book to you.
What a nice child you are.
Not too consciously naive.
What do you mean?
Oh, nothing. I dare say some people think I am.
Did you overhear me talking to Neil?
Well, yes.
I'm ashamed of myself.
Nonsense, It did me a lot of good.
That wasn't all you heard, was it? Did you hear?
It's the loveliest 1st of May, I remember. country's all dressed in white lace.
I'm trying to remember what you could have heard me say about Rose.
Well, whatever it was, she doesn't know.
We got Rose all wrong. It's because she's so original.
Original? Rose?
Yes. Even the way she dresses. That frilly pink dress. And a real crinoline.
Topaz was...
What?
Nothing. Everything Rose does is original, apparently. Even the way she dances, inventing little steps of her own. And she's so intelligent. He kindly says I am too. But Rose is a wit. A fact not yet disclosed to her family. As for looks, she'd be a toast at any period of history. By the time we get to the village, we're reciting poems about spring. It is rather nice being with someone who knows the poems you know. And then we spot Rose sitting with Neil outside the Keys Inn. I have a cherry brandy to drink. It is quite perfect.
You know your father's been to London again?
He told me he'd been to the British Museum, so you needn't worry. He wasn't with Mrs. Cotton.
As if that proves anything. People do nothing but use it for assignations. I met him there myself once, in the mummy room.
Don't you think he might be getting started in writing again?
If he is, it's that woman who started him. I'm no good to him. Why won't he talk about literature to me?
I blame Father for lots of things, but not for that. Because it really is agony to talk to Topaz about books. When I was longing for a calm discussion of Tolstoy's War and Peace, she said, "Oh, it's the overlapping dimensions that are so wonderful. I tried to paint it once on a circular canvas." And then she couldn't remember who Natasha was.
Where did he get the money to go to London? The vicar bought that hairy travelling rug off me. So I gave Mortmain £5. Though I didn't think he'd spend it on seeing her. Oh, I suppose I oughtn't even to mind that. If she stimulates him.
The photographic studio is at the back of the Foxes' house. Their hall has a black marble floor. Mr. Fox asked to be remembered to you, Mrs. Mortmain.
What did you have to wear in the pictures, Stephen?
A shirt and some corduroy trousers that were there. But she said they looked too new. I'm to wear them for work and then they'll be all right for next time.
So you're going again?
Yes. She'll send for me next time she has a free Sunday. Probably in about a month.
Okay, who wants the burnt steak?
Neil, they're all burnt.
If you haven't eaten burnt barbecue at the seaside, you haven't lived.
I'm not complaining. They're splendid big lumps of meat. Rose, shall I do a plate for you?
Watch me slide down this sandhill.
Whoa! Hey, they're good and rare on the inside.
Well, Neil, did you ever see such a change in a girl as this Missy Rose?
No, it is quite an improvement. I didn't mind her while she was playing tennis, either.
Thanks very much. Do you think it's an improvement, Simon?
Shall we say it's perfect for the sea and the sunlight, and the other rose is perfect for candlelight? Oh,
well, thank you, kind sir.
Mortmain, how could you? What are we to feed them, and what on? You know we haven't a stick of dining room furniture.
We sold the table last year.
Oh, give them ham and eggs in the kitchen. They won't mind. They've certainly provided enough ham.
I think you've lost your mind.
I felt I had to. She invited us to dine at Scopney again next week. I actually forgot about the dining furniture. Can't you rig something up?
Don't worry. We'll manage. Cassandra, come and look at the dining room with me.
There's nothing but the grand piano.
The top of a piano would be original.
With Father carving on the keys.
Could we sit on the floor on cushions? We certainly haven't enough chairs.
We haven't enough cushions either. All we really have enough of is floor.
In the end, Topaz gets Stephen to take the henhouse door off its hinges and make some rough trestles to put it on. And we push it close up to the window seat, which saves us three chairs. We use the grey brocade curtains from the hall as a tablecloth. They look magnificent, though the join shows a bit. All our silver and good china and glass went long ago, but the vicar lends us his, including his silver candelabra. Of course we ask him to dinner too. And he comes early and sits in the kitchen giving his possessions a final polish while we get dressed. Our dinner menu is clear soup, made from ham bone, boiled chicken and ham, peaches and cream, the cotton sent the peaches just in time, savoury, deviled ham mousse.
Rose, do you think we might see round the castle?
Oh, yes. Light the lantern, Thomas. They're making go up on the walls.
Cass, isn't there some way that you could leave Simon and me alone?
I've been hoping to ever since dinner, but it's really difficult. Can't you just lag somewhere?
I did, on the gatehouse tower. But he just asked Thomas to wait with the lantern because I wouldn't be able to see.
Who sleeps in the four-poster?
Rose.
And, what's behind this door?
The tower.
Rose's pink evening dress, of course.
Oh, look. Look, you can see the moat glinting down below your window.
Neil, how'd you like to swim?
I love it.
Swim tonight?
Yes. It'll be fun.
Neil can borrow Thomas's bathing shorts.
Rose and I will watch from the window.
Where are you, Cassandra?
I'm coming.
Is it deep enough for me to dive?
Yes, if you're careful. Look out for the mud at the bottom.
Gosh, that was cold! Oh, and after all the sunshine we've been having!
I wonder if I ought to bathe, really. After such a heavy dinner.
Oh, you don't get away with that. Come on, or I'll pull you in.
Oh, please, Lord. I'm doing this for my sister. Warm it up a bit. It's like being skinned with icy knives.
Oh, come on. You get used to it.
Look up! Topaz and the vicar at the dining room window.
Once we get round this corner, there won't be any more light from the windows.
No, but it makes the moon seem even brighter. Listen to the water slapping against the walls.
What happened to these walls? Why are they all ruined?
Well, Cromwell's Puritans battered them down when they were fighting King Charles I.
Oh, what a darn shame.
Oh, what's that white thing? Oh, the swans!
They must have been asleep.
Swans can be dangerous, you know. Listen. That must be the vicar.
Come on! Last stretch!
We're here!
I'll send her in now, Mrs. Mortmain.
But I'm not cold.
Ah, yes, you are. You're shivering. Hey, come on. Where do we get towels?
I'll get you one. Yes. If you wait in the kitchen where it's warm, I'll bring a towel down.
Towels. We have so few that on wash days we just have to shake ourselves. I decide to get my own towel, or Rose's, whichever is drier, and fold it like a clean towel, and go back to Neil with it clutched against me and then apologise for having made it a bit damp. There will be no need to disturb Rose's tete-a-tete with Simon, because both towels are on our bedroom tower staircase. I threw them there while tidying the house for the Cottons. After I turn the bend in the tower, I'm almost in darkness, so I go on all fours, feeling my way quietly until I am near the door where Rose's dress is hanging. I stretch up and feel for the towels. And then through the door, I hear...
Rose, will you marry me?
Kiss me, please, Simon.
I stand stock still in case they hear me. I have time to think that I wouldn't like my first kiss to be from a man with a beard, and to notice that a very cold draught is blowing down the tower on me.
Yes, please, Simon.
Oh, Rose! Rose!
Cassandra, is it all right by you if Rose marries me?
Simon, your beard is gone. Oh, let me hug you both.
My child, you're like ice. Hurry up and change out of that swimsuit.
Oh, I must take Neil a towel first. How do you like Simon without his beard? Wonderful.
Oh. Oh, Cassandra, I thought you'd forgotten me. As you can see, the fire is steaming me dry.
Isn't it splendid? Rose and Simon are engaged.
Engaged? To be married?
You don't look exactly pleased.
Pleased? Clear out and let me get dressed.
Neil, please. Why do you hate Rose so?
I liked her a lot at first.
But not now. Why not, Neil?
Because she's a gold digger. And you know it, Cassandra.
How dare you say a thing like that?
Can you honestly tell me she isn't marrying Simon for his money?
Of course I can.
You darn little liar. Did you take me bathing deliberately?
Yes. Yes, I did. Oh. And I'm glad I did. You mind your own business, Neil Cotton.
Oh, get the hell out of here.
Father and Topaz and Mrs. Cotton are all suitably shocked and delighted, and Neil does manage to come in and congratulate them civilly in the end. When Rose and I are in bed, I get the whole story out of her.
I had to see him without that beard, Cass. I'd worked up a sort of horror about it. I went close to him, and I traced the outline of his lips with my finger, and then he tried to kiss me, but I dodged, and I said, no, not while you've got that beard. And he said, will you if I shave it? And I said, I can't tell till it's off. And then I ran, and I got Father's shaving things and Topaz's manicure scissors and a jug of hot water.
Oh, Rose, you must have been petrified we'd be back before he was done.
It seemed ages before he dried his face and turned around. And then he said, now you know the worst. Oh, he looked humble and touching and so handsome. Don't you think he's handsome, Cassandra?
Yes. Yes, very handsome.
What happened next? I said, that's wonderful, Simon. Thank you very, very much for doing it for me. And then he asked me to marry him. I remembered your saying I wouldn't know how I felt about him until I let him kiss me. So I asked him. And it was wonderful. Oh, the relief. The relief of finding I'm in love with Simon.
Supposing you hadn't found it, would you have refused him?
No, I wouldn't. Just before he kissed me, I said to myself, you'll marry him anyway, my girl. And do you know what made me say it? Beyond him, on the dressing table, I could see my towel that I'd lent him for the shave, all thin and frayed and awful. Not one spare towel have we in this house.
Don't I know it?
I won't live like that. I won't. I won't.
I write this sitting on the ruins beyond the kitchen, basking in the bright June sunshine. It is a week since Rose and Topaz went to London to stay with Mrs. Cotton. She asked me too, but someone has to be here to look after Father and Thomas and Stephen. There's money for meat now. Mrs. Cotton insisted on buying the old bear coat for £200. And she's paying for the whole of Rose's trousseau, which will be £1,000, Rose writes. Stephen went to the Foxes for the weekend to pose for more photographs. And Thomas stayed with a school friend. And Father decided on a whim to go up to London, carrying with him an old, cracked willow pattern plate. He seems perfectly demented. So here I am with the place all to myself on Midsummer's Eve.
Cassandra? Cassandra?
Simon?
I'd forgotten it was Midsummer Eve. Huh? Rose told me about the rites you always have. How pretty your garland is.
What are you doing here?
I had some work to do with the Scotney agent. Then I thought I'd come and call on you and your father. Is he out?
He's gone to London.
What a glorious place. Is that the vicar's port that Rose told me about?
Yes. He gives me a little every year.
Do we drink it or make a libation?
We.
Oh, I'm going to celebrate too. I shall represent Rose, even if she does feel too old for it.
All right. That'll be lovely. I'll unpack my basket.
Rose never told me about the herbs. What are they for?
We burn them. They're a charm against witchcraft.
What's the white stuff?
Salt. It wards off bad luck and turns the flames a lovely blue.
And the cake?
Well, we show that to the fire before we eat it. Then we drink wine and throw a few drops into the flames.
And then you dance around the fire?
Oh, I'm much too old for that.
Not on your life, you're not. I'll dance with you.
Oh, look. Look at the moon coming up. The ground looks like luminous snow.
It's mist. Look, rolling up from the moat.
I try to be as matter-of-fact as possible about the rites, and we get through them fairly quickly, but I still feel a little embarrassed.
That mist has stopped just below us. You must be putting a spell on it.
I love the way the castle towers seem to float on it.
Yes. Could anyone paint that? Debussy could have done it in music. Are you fond of him?
I've never heard the music of Debussy.
Surely you must have. Not on records or the radio?
We don't have a gramophone or a wireless.
Good Lord. Well, we have a new gramophone at Scotney. Why don't I drive you over to hear it now? We'll have some supper.
We chatter all the way to Scotney. And then he asks the butler to bring supper on a tray to the pavilion. He turns on the fountains in the big oval pool.
So you can watch them while you listen to Debussy. They go well together.
Oh, I do know it. A girl once played it at the school concert. It's beautiful.
The next piece is about a drowned cathedral. You hear it rise and sink into the sea again.
Oh, I could listen all night.
I think you're the kind of child who might develop a passion for Bach.
Well, I didn't at school. The one Bach piece I learned made me feel like I was being repeatedly hit on the head with a teaspoon.
I'll find you some Bach that you'll like.
Oh, look at these albums. Just reading the composers' names is exciting.
You shall hear them all in time.
Your supper, sir.
Thanks, Graves. No need to wait. Here, Cassandra, have some wine.
Thank you.
I'll put on dance music for eating, too.
How is Rose? Is she very busy?
Well, they're shopping for her things every day. I imagine it is a little tiring. She's admired everywhere she goes. Topaz is too, of course. And my mother's a pretty good looker. And the three of them go out together well. It's something.
They need me to bring the average down.
Don't fish. You're far prettier than any girl who's so intelligent has a right to be.
I think I'm a bit better looking when Rose isn't around.
Well, you're certainly very pretty tonight.
We talk as we eat and the music plays, and Simon peels me a peach. I imagine drawing him, his fine hands, and the line of his shoulders, which seems exactly right with the line of his jaw, and the curve of his lips.
What a fascinating tune.
It's called If It Ain't Love. Do you want to dance? Then I must take you home.
We dance without saying one word. I don't even think. I seem to move with a pleasure that is mindless.
Thank you, Cassandra.
Thank you, too. It's lovely.
You astonishing girl.
Why?
You kiss very nicely. You must have had a lot of practice.
I've never kissed a man before in my life. I need to go home.
Cassandra, oh my dear, I'm so sorry. Surely you weren't frightened of me.
I wasn't frightened, but I thought you'd taken it for granted that you could kiss me.
Cassandra, it was just an impulse. Because you've been so sweet all evening, and because I enjoyed the dance.
And because I like you very much.
And because you're missing Rose, perhaps.
I'm damned if I'll pass that. That'd be an insult to both of you. No, it was a kiss in your own right, my dear.
Anyway, we're making too much of it. Please forgive me for being so silly. Now may I hear the Buck record before I go home?
Very well. We'll play it while I put the candles out.
After that, he drives me home and thanks me for letting him share my Midsummer Eve. And when he leaves, I dash up and onto the walls. The mist has cleared, so I can watch the lights of the car travel slowly along the lane and turn onto the God's End Road. Even after they vanish on the outskirts of the village, I still watch on and catch one last glimpse of them on the road to Scotney. He belongs to Rose. I could never win him from her, even if I were wicked enough to try, which I never would be. Oh, just to be in love seems the most blissful luxury I've ever known. And I hang on to that. Although I know there will be the most dreadful unhappiness ahead.
In I Capture the Castle, Cassandra was played by Holiday Granger, Rose by Scarlett Alice Johnson, Mortmain by Toby Jones, and Topaz by Charlotte Emerson. Simon was played by John McMillan, Neil by Henry DeVas, Stephen by Harry McIntyre, and Thomas by Sam Hattersley. Dodie Smith's I Capture the Castle was dramatised by Jane Rogers and directed in Salford by Nadia Molinari. I Capture the Castle by Dodie Smith, dramatised by Jane Rogers.
Today is my birthday, I think the most miserable of my life. When I wake up, I can hear music outside my bedroom door. I dash to the landing and there's a small portable wireless with a card on it saying many happy returns from Stephen. So that's why he's been posing for Leader Fox, to save up for me. A month ago, it would have made me deliriously happy. But now the sound of music just makes me pine all the more for Simon. Thomas gives me a book on astronomy, which he is very keen on. After he's left for school, Father arrives back on the early train from London and notices the wireless.
Oh, Cassandra. I hadn't remembered your birthday. But Topaz will. She'll send you something from me.
Did he stay at the Cottons flat?
Yes, in Simon's room. He went to Neil's hotel. Simon has a charming nature, unfortunately.
Why unfortunately?
Because Rose takes advantage of it. Are you sure she's in love with him, Cassandra?
Well, she told me she was. And you know how truthful she is.
You're right. I can't remember her ever telling a lie. But her manner last night...
What was her manner like?
I'll get it. You're so damned unresponsive and so obviously sure of her power over him.
Parcel for Miss Cassandra Mortmain.
Ah.
Good heavens, it's enormous. Can you set it down on the table?
Oh.
Thank you.
Oh, hello. I'll use the bread knife to prise it open.
What on earth?
Oh. It's a gramophone.
Yeah.
And a wireless combined. Oh, isn't it beautiful? It must be from Simon.
There's a note here.
Love from Simon.
Listen to this. Sounds like the lost souls of seagulls, doesn't it?
Oh, oh, stop. Stop, it can't be good for it to shriek like that.
Happy birthday, Cassandra. What's that?
Oh, it's a... Well, it's
A radiogram.
Mm.
That's a very handsome present, Mr. Mortmain.
No, it isn't from me.
Father.
Yes. Well, I'll leave you to it.
Stephen, thank you so much for the portable wireless. It was a lovely surprise.
Is it from Simon?
What, this? Oh, yes, it is.
Yes. That's very handsome.
The wireless part isn't as good as yours.
I'll be seeing you.
Where are you going?
Doesn't matter.
Wait. Wait, let's go for a little walk.
All right, if you want to.
Yours is very practical, you know. I can even take it out of doors if I want.
It really doesn't matter.
Oh, Stephen. It was a much bigger present from you. Simon didn't have to save or work for it.
No, that was my privilege. My dear. I was coming to tell you some good news. I've had a telegram from Leda asking me to come for a screen test to go on the pictures.
Oh, Stephen, that's wonderful.
Do you want to turn back?
No. Let's see if there are any late bluebells in the wood.
Really?
Come on. There's a hot, resinous smell instead of the scent of bluebells. The only ones left are shriveled and going to seed. I lead the way all the time and reach the little grassy clearing in the middle of the wood before he does. He comes closer and closer to me, then stands still, staring at me questioningly. I nod my head, and then he takes me in his arms and kisses me very gently. Then suddenly he changes and kisses me more and more, not gently at all. And I change too, and I want him to go on and on. I don't even stop him when he pulls my dress down over my shoulder. Then suddenly he steps back.
Don't let me! Don't let me!
He pushes me away so violently that I nearly fall over. I plunge blindly back through the wood. I thrust my way through the larches and run back to the castle. Then I slip on the stairs, banging my knee badly.
Cassandra! Please stop crying. Please, please stop. I'm not coming after you. It's all right. Really, it is. There's nothing wrong in it if we love each other.
I don't love you. I hate you. No. No, I didn't mean that. I'll never be able to explain.
I lie with my head and arms on Simon's gramophone case, and for the first time in my life, I wish I were dead. Later that afternoon, a note is pushed under my door.
Dear Cassandra, please do not be unhappy. It will come right. It was all my fault. If you forgive me for shocking you so, please write yes on a piece of paper and put it under my door. I'm going out now and will not come back until it's dark and your candle is out, so you need not be frightened of meeting me. Truly, it is all right. With love from Stephen.
I write yes and put it under his door. The honest thing would be to tell him it will never be any good. I know this. Asking him to go into the wood was a wicked thing. Wicked to him and wicked to myself.
Cassandra, want to know a fact? Rose is definitely not in love with Simon.
Thomas, how can you possibly know she isn't in love?
She hardly ever mentions him. Harry's sister's in love, and she never stops talking about her fiancé. Harry and I make bets on it. That last weekend I stayed there, she mentioned him 51 times.
That's nonsense. Rose happens to be more reticent.
Reticent? Rose? She talks her head off about anything she's keen on. Do you know that in the letter I had from her, there isn't one word about Simon?
When did you have a letter?
I didn't show you because she asked me not to. It was just one enormous list of all the things that had been bought for her and how much everything cost. She was afraid it would make you envious.
Envious of her things?
And I bet I know why she made that list. It was to convince herself that marrying for money is worth it.
I have just decided what to do.
If Rose really loves Simon, I will never try to take him from her, even in my thoughts. But I must know the truth. I will go to London with Stephen on Saturday.
Cassandra! Oh, Cass!
Good heavens, how long have you been waiting here?
Why didn't you tell us you were coming?
Oh, I'm sorry, Topaz, but I needed to...
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Oh, you must stay. My bed's big enough for two.
We'll kick each other, Rose.
Oh, all right, I'll sleep on the floor, but you must stay. You must, mustn't she, Simon?
Yes, of course she must stay and come out with us tonight.
Mrs. Cotton will be pleased. We can see about your bridesmaid dress on Monday morning.
Oh, if I'd have known you were here, I'd have rushed home. We've been to the dullest matinee.
But I've arranged for Stephen to take me home tonight. He's at the Foxes having a screen test.
Well, I'll ring him there and tell him.
Oh, Cassandra, do you think your father will be all right without you?
I've left plenty of food for him and Thomas.
We'll call up Scotney and have a cold roast of beef sent over. They can eat their way through that.
Oh, I can lend her a dress. Oh, Simon, you telephone Neil and say he's to come and dance with her.
Splendid idea.
Oh, you should have a bath in my bathroom, Cassandra. I've got 3 sizes of towel. Stephen's got the film job. Apparently, Leader's terribly excited about it. Stephen's to have £10 a day for at least 5 days. He doesn't have to say anything, just keep wandering about with some goats. It's symbolic or something.
Gracious! Fancy Stephen earning £50.
Oh, he'll earn more than that before Leader's finished with him. She's crazy about him. And her dear husband, Aubrey, is crazy about Topaz.
The dress she lends me is fashionably black, and everyone is wonderfully kind to me. I think I do look reasonably nice in it. Neil arrives and we stroll along Park Lane to the dance. But the shoes I've borrowed turn out to be the kind that slip off really easily. Neil leads me to a deserted corridor just off the ballroom.
Now, take those darn shoes off and I'll take mine off too in case I step on you.
It's the queerest feeling dancing on the thick carpet, but I quite enjoy it.
I'm glad you came to London. If you hadn't, I might not have seen you again. I'm going back home a week today.
You mean California? Aren't you going to stay for the wedding? I thought you were best man.
Simon will have to get someone else. I've been offered a partnership in a ranch, got the cable today. They need me at once.
So this is where you're hiding.
Neil, will you dance this with me?
If you want me to.
It's lovely to see Rose again.
I'm afraid all this shopping is wearing her out.
Rose loves getting new things.
I wish we could get married at once and get out of London. But both she and Mother insist on waiting for the trousseau. Tell me, Cassandra, how do you find your father at the moment?
I'm sorry?
He was most odd when he stayed here yesterday. Mother told me he went into the kitchen and borrowed all the cookery books.
Oh, Father's always odd. Thank you again for my birthday present. I listen to it every single day.
I hope you're borrowing all the records you want from Scotney.
When he said that, I suddenly saw the pavilion lit by moonlight and candlelight. And by the most cruel coincidence, they started playing If It Ain't Love, the very tune we had danced to. I felt myself blushing violently. I sprang up and ran towards a mirror somewhere along the corridor.
What's the matter?
Oh, an eyelash in my eye.
Can I help?
I can manage, thanks.
It's odd how that dress changes you. I don't know that I approve of your growing up. You were perfect as you were.
It was the funny little girl he had liked. The comic child playing at Midsummer Rites. She was the one he kissed.
Cassandra, can we have a talk?
Of course, Topaz.
Can't you wait until the morning?
I don't see why it should. It's only 10:30 and I got Aubrey to bring me back early on purpose.
Well, hurry up, anyway.
Well, let's go up to the roof garden. I hardly had a minute with your father when he stayed here. My room's too small to share, and Mrs. Cotton kept him up talking very late both nights.
Are you still worried about them?
Not in the way I was. There's certainly nothing on her side. Mrs. Cotton's just a celebrity collector. She even values me now that she's seen some paintings of me.
She asked you to stay with her before she saw them.
Go on. Tell me I'm unjust. I know I am, really. But she gets on my nerves until I could scream. Talk, talk, talk. And never did I see such vitality. I don't believe it's normal for a woman of her age to be so healthy. If you ask me, it's glandular.
Well, come back to the castle and take a rest.
But has Mortmain shown the slightest sign of needing me?
I've got to be needed, Cassandra. I always have been. Men have either painted me or been in love with me or just plain ill-treated me. Some men have to do a lot of ill-treating, you know. It's good for their work. But one way or another, I've always been needed. I've got to inspire people. It's my job in life.
Well, I have a faint hope that Father might be working.
Do you mean I've inspired him? Just by keeping away from him? What do you think of Aubrey Fox?
Leader's husband? Oh, not much. Don't tell me he needs inspiring.
He could do greater work. He feels he could.
You mean if you both got divorces and married each other?
Well, not exactly.
I suppose it wouldn't be enough that Thomas and I need you.
Oh, darling. But can't you see that art comes before the individual?
Then you can't leave Father.
Oh, Topaz, don't you see that whether he misses you or not, a shock like that might wreck him completely?
Just imagine his biographer writing, Mortmain was about to start on the second phase of his career when the faithlessness of his artist model wife shattered the fabric of his life.
Oh, Cassandra!
Well, can't you see how prosperity would misjudge you? Well, if you stick to him, you may be this girl, beautiful as a Blake angel, who sacrificed her own varied talents to ensure Mortmain's renaissance.
Oh, darling, you ought to write the biography yourself.
I will. I will.
Cassandra, you have saved me from a dreadful mistake. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I've put out one of my trousseau nightgowns for you.
Thank you, Rose. I hope I won't tear. It seems very fragile.
There are plenty more.
Well, now we can talk.
Put those awful roses in the bathroom, will you? Simon sends a new lot every day.
You'll keep the card here?
Oh, chuck it in the waste paper basket.
Rose? You don't love him?
No. Isn't it a pity?
Why? Why did you lie to me the night you got engaged?
I didn't. I really thought I was in love.
How long have you known?
Oh, ages. I found out soon after we came to London. Every minute we're together, I can feel him asking for love. He links it with everything. If it's a lovely day or if we listen to music together, it makes me want to scream. Oh, God. Oh, I didn't mean to tell you.
Would you like me to tell him for you?
Tell him? Oh, no wonder you're upset. Don't worry, darling, I'm still going to marry him.
No, you're not. You're not going to do anything so wicked.
Why is it suddenly wicked? You always knew I'd marry him, whether I loved him or not. You helped me all you could without ever being sure I was in love with him.
It was just fun. Like something in a book, it wasn't real.
Well, it's real enough now.
You can't do it, Rose. Just for clothes and jewellery and bathrooms.
You talk as if I were doing it all for myself. Do you know what my last thoughts have been, lying here night after night? Well, at least they've enough to eat at the castle today. I've thought of you more than anyone, of all the things that I can do for you when I'm married.
Then you can stop thinking, because I won't take anything from you. And you can stop pretending that you're doing it for us. You're going to wreck Simon's life because you're greedy and cowardly.
You're in love with him yourself. Oh, it only needed that.
Oh, shut up!
Cass, I swear, I'd give him up if I thought he'd marry you instead. I'd jump at it. We'd still have money in the family and I wouldn't have to have him as a husband. But I know he won't fall in love with you. He thinks of you as a little girl.
You're not going to marry him without loving him.
Don't you know that he would rather have me that way than not at all?
I'm going home.
You can't. Not tonight. There are no trains.
Then I'll sit in the waiting room till morning.
Cassandra, please, listen.
Shut up.
What am I to tell them if you leave tonight?
Tell them what you damn well like.
You're failing me. Just when I need you most desperately.
Oh, go and sit in your bathroom and count your peach-coloured towels. That'll cheer you up. You lying, grasping little cheat! I'm thankful to be out in the cool air. But after the first wave of relief, my mind begins to go over and over the scene with Rose. I come to earth when I strike Regent Street.
Hello, darling. Don't I know you?
No, go away!
I walk as fast as I can until I suddenly see a restaurant which Topaz used to talk about. Corner House. It's famous for staying open all night. My eyes keep swimming with tears. But worse than that, worse even than my misery over Simon, is the realization that I've been utterly in the wrong with Rose. I can see the main reason for my outburst wasn't noble anxiety about Simon's happiness, but sheer, blazing jealousy. I drink cup after cup of tea, the last one so weak that I can see the lump of sugar sitting at the bottom of it. The waitress comes and clears away my cup in a very final way, so I look at the bill and open my bag. But my purse isn't in my bag. It's in the evening bag Rose lent me.
I'm sorry it took so long. I walked nearly a mile before there was a taxi.
I'm so sorry to call you out, Stephen. Oh, you poor thing, you look terrible. I ordered this lemonade for you.
Thanks.
Did you snatch the telephone from Lida? What luck you ever heard her talking. Is there a telephone on the upstairs landing or something?
There's one in the studio. We were in there.
Do you mean she was still photographing you?
No, we were just sitting talking.
Till 2 in the morning, just you and Lida. Oh. Tell me about your film work.
My name's going to be in print. There's to be a piece about me under the photograph Lida's getting into the papers, saying how I'm a young actor of great promise. After this picture where I come on with the goats, I'm to go on contract and be taught to act.
Goodness, Stephen.
Well, that's what they said. And you wanted me to do it. Oh, let's get out of this place.
We could have a look at the Thames now. It's getting light. The sky is red. The river's red. Like a river of blood.
What is it, Cassandra? Is it something to do with me?
No, no. No, of course not.
I might have known that nothing I've done tonight could matter to you. Who are you in love with, Cassandra? Is it Neil?
No. No, it isn't Neil.
Then it's Simon. That's bad. That is... Because Rose will never let him go.
But she doesn't love him, Stephen. She admitted it.
Rose is bad.
Not really bad.
Lots of women are.
Sometimes... Sometimes without meaning to be. Oh, Stephen, can you ever forgive me for letting you kiss me when I knew I was in love with someone else.
I soon saw I was making a fool of myself. Things like that happen when you're in love with the wrong person. Worse things, things you never forgive yourself for.
Are you miserable because you made love to Lida Fox? It was her fault, wasn't it? You don't need to blame yourself.
I'll blame myself as long as I live. It's you I love and always will. Oh, Cassandra, are you sure you couldn't ever get to care for me? You liked it when I kissed you. Well, you seemed to. If we could get married,
Stephen,
I'd work for you. If I'm any good at acting, perhaps we could live in London, a long way from the others. Couldn't I help you through somehow when Simon's married to Rose?
Please, stop. I'm so fond of you. And so deeply grateful, but I could never marry you. Oh, Stephen, I'm so sorry.
Stephen and I come home on the first train, and he packs up his things and leaves for London again straight away. I write to Rose asking her to forgive me. And then I have a whole day to sleep and cry in before Thomas gets home from school.
You've been howling, haven't you? I suppose the castle's depressing after being in London.
Yes. And it was sad seeing Stephen go. I'm wondering what would happen to him.
I wouldn't worry about Stephen. All the girls in the village are in love with him. One day you're going to find out what you missed. I've brought a haddock for tea.
Good. Father will get tea at Scotney, so we needn't wait.
The servants there must be tired of feeding him.
What does he do there?
Does he just read for the fun of it, or is he up to something?
If only we knew that.
Harry says he ought to be psychoanalysed.
Does Harry know about psychoanalysis?
His father's a doctor, you know.
Simon once said father should be psychoanalyzed. I wish I'd got him to tell me more. Would Harry's father have any helpful books, do you think?
I'll ask. Though, now Rose is marrying Simon, it doesn't really matter whether father writes or not.
Oh, Thomas, it does. It matters terribly.
I poached the haddock and milk. It is delicious.
Hello, you two.
Hello, father.
Ah. Can you spare me this?
The haddock bone? Oh, we thought you were eating at Scopney. I can make you some eggs.
A tea. I can use this bone.
Stop laughing, Thomas. We shall be ashamed of our callousness if Father really is going off his head.
He isn't. He's putting it on or something.
Later that evening, I find myself thinking about Father again. If he starts a new book, Rose might believe there would be enough money coming in to make life bearable, and still might break off her engagement. I see the lamp alight in the gatehouse. It always conjures up an image of Father, remote, withdrawn, unapproachable. Surely one ought to know a little more of one's father than we do.
Go away!
Something important?
Yes, very.
What's the matter, Cassandra? You're pale. You ill? You'd better sit down.
Oh, what are all these papers on the wall?
American comic strips, commonly called the funnies. Now, what is it, Cassandra?
Are they to do with your work?
Never you mind about my work.
Father, you've got to let me know what you're doing.
And is that the sole reason for this visitation? To cross-examine me?
No. Yes. It is. It's exactly that. And I'm not giving up until I get an answer.
Out you go! Horn! Oh, God. Is it your elbow? Oh, that could be agony. Please let me feel. Nothing broken? Here. Let's walk up and down a little. Until you feel better. Oh, dear.
It's going off. Just let me sit down for
a minute. Here. Thank you.
I can move it, see? It's nothing serious.
Oh, it might have been. I haven't lost my temper like that since that wretched business with your mother and the cake knife.
Oh, Father, do you think that's what's been the matter with you? That you stopped getting violent? Has repressing your temper somehow repressed your talent?
Who put that brilliant idea into your head? Was it Topaz?
No, I thought of it myself, just this minute.
Very ingenious of you. But it happens to be nonsense.
Well, it's no sillier than believing you dried up because you went to prison. Some people do think that, you know.
Idiots. Good God. How could a few months in prison do me any harm? I've often thought I'd like to be back there. Especially now I'm getting started again. Oh, for the peace of that little cell.
Oh, Father, do you mean you have found a new way to work? Do all these crazy things, the crosswords and the cracked plates and the comics, do they really mean something?
Great heavens, what do you take me for? Of course they mean something. Now, go away.
I will, if you'll answer me just one question. How long will it be before the book's finished?
Finished? It isn't even begun. I'm still collecting material. I believe I could make a start now if I could get scaffolding that really satisfied me. I need a backbone.
Was that why you took the haddocks?
Don't be facetious. No. The haddock may be said to have turned into a red herring across the trail. Lots of things do. The ladder-like pattern is interesting, though. I must study the fishes of the world, and whales,
and the forerunners of Wales, primeval, antediluvian. The Ark. No, not the Bible again.
He's writing at his desk.
Wales.
I keep dead quiet.
Cetaceans.
I begin to think I had better creep out, but I'm afraid that opening the door will make a noise.
A squid?
It comes back to me that he liked Mother to sit with him while he wrote, provided she kept quite still. But after a while, bits of me begin to tickle maddeningly.
Our colours of emotion. Plankton. Oh, hello.
Was the idea any good?
Your mother used to sit like that.
I know. I was thinking of her a minute ago.
So was I. Probably telepathy.
Mother helped you quite a lot, didn't she?
Yes, in an odd way. God knows she never had an idea in her head, dear woman, but having her in the room seemed to give me confidence. Well, good night, my child. Is the elbow better?
Quite, thank you.
Good. I must say, I'm curious to know what keyed you up to this attack tonight.
I was anxious.
Well, I dare say I appeared pretty eccentric, and plenty of people will think that's an understatement when this book gets out. If it ever does. I've lost confidence, you know. It isn't laziness, I swear. It never has been.
I believe you're going to start very soon now.
Well, I hope so, because if I don't get going soon, the whole impetus may die.
Look, why not let me sit here as Mother used to? And you go to your desk and start this very night.
No. I couldn't yet. I know you mean well, my dear, but you're making me nervous. Now, run along to bed. I'm going myself.
So what do you think, Thomas? It's hopeful, isn't it?
It sounds like he may really have something up his sleeve. But I don't like the thought of all the material he's collecting. It's like taking too many notes at school. You feel you've achieved something when you haven't.
You mean he may never get going on the book itself? Well, if only we could push him in the right way. Simon said that maybe another spell of imprisonment.
Yes, that really might do the trick.
But who? And how?
Then suddenly the whole plan is complete in my mind, almost to the last detail. It's crazy, and I'm afraid Thomas will laugh at it. But no, he's dead keen.
Give me some of Mrs. Cotton's housekeeping, Lolly, and tomorrow I'll buy everything we need. And then we'll do it the very next day. Quickly, before Topaz comes home.
Father goes to Scotney the next morning, so there's no danger of his seeing what I'm up to. By the time Thomas comes home, I have everything in readiness, except for the few things that are too heavy for me to carry alone. He helps me with those and we make our final plans for the morning.
Cassandra, he's already pumping up his bike. He'll be off to Scotney any minute.
Get out the house without letting him see you. Go along the walls, down the gatehouse stairs, then dash up the mound and hide behind the tower. Be ready to help. Go on, quick. Father, you can't go off without your breakfast.
Huh? Oh, no, they'll give me some of Scotney.
Your bike needs new tyres, you know. Shall I give that back one an extra pump?
Thank you, Cassandra.
Can you spare a minute or two to come up to Belmont Tower? I think you may need to let someone at Scotney know what's been happening in the dungeon there.
Oh, Lord. Did that last heavy rain do a lot of damage?
Well, I think you'll see quite a few changes. You go down the ladder first.
I wonder if Simon's agent has the authority to do repairs to the tower. Yeah. Can't see much after the sunlight. Hello. Have you been camping out down here?
One of us is going to. Go up the tower staircase a little way, will you?
The crumbling's worse, is it?
Thomas! I'm here. You take the left side of the ladder. Ready? Right. Heave!
Come down and show me what you mean, Cassandra.
Don't say anything till he comes back.
Cassandra? Can you hear me calling you? Hello, Thomas. Why haven't you gone to school? What's the matter?
God! You've taken away the ladder!
Father, will you please look around you? It's sort of a surprise.
It's the mattress from the four-poster bed in Cassandra's room. And there's plenty of blankets and pillows.
There are washing arrangements and drinking water in the garderobe.
A new stationery on the table.
We think you'll have enough light to work by. Now we've cleared the ivy from all the lowest arrow slits. We'll give you a lantern at night, of course. Very good meals will be coming down in a basket. We bought a thermos.
My dear, dear children. Cassandra, are you... what is it, 17, 18, or are you 8? Bring back that ladder at once.
We think you ought to start writing, Father. For your own sake, far more than ours. And we think being shut up here may help you to concentrate.
Bring back that ladder.
We'll leave you to get settled. You can tell us at lunchtime if there's any books or papers you need.
Don't you dare go away.
Oh, Father, it's an experiment. Give it a chance.
You little lunatic.
I warn you. So when we develop into a brawl, let me get the door shut. Knowing he won't be let out till he's done some work will do wonders.
But if it doesn't come right psychologically, from the depths of Father, it won't come right at all. You can't trammel the creative mind.
Why not? His creative mind's been untrammeled for years, without doing a hand's turn. Let's see what trammeling does for it.
At 1 o'clock, we take his lunch in a basket. Soup in the thermos, chicken salad, strawberries and cream, and a cigar. 9 pence.
It's only a light luncheon so that it won't make you sleepy. There'll be a bigger meal tonight, with wine.
Thank you. This looks superb. Now, listen, you comics. I'm touched that you're doing this to try to help me, and I've had one or two splendid ideas. But the novelty has worn off now. If you keep me here any longer, you'll undo your good work.
Any books or papers you want, Father?
No, there aren't. All I want is to get out.
All afternoon, I'm fighting off thoughts of Simon. I can't let him into my head. I just can't bear to. I'm upset that Rose hasn't replied to my letter. I prepare Father's dinner. Melon, cold salmon, tinned peaches, cheese and biscuits, a bottle of white wine, 3 shillings, coffee, and another cigar.
By shouting all afternoon.
Someone's bound to pass through the fields sooner or later.
I doubt it. Mr. Stubbins isn't cutting his wheat for some weeks yet.
Ah.
Anyway, your voice doesn't carry beyond the mound.
We must bring in pyjamas and a dressing gown for tonight.
If you leave me here all night, I shall go out of my mind. I mean it, Cassandra. Don't you know what it does to people being shut up in small spaces?
There's plenty of space upwards.
Oh, you damn little idiots. Let me out! Let me out!
Here's your dinner. We'll let you out as soon as you've written something. Say, 50 pages?
I never wrote 50 pages in less than 3 months, even when I could write.
Just unpack your dinner, will you?
I'll show you. Here! Take that!
Close the door, quick!
Oh, my God! You hurt, Cassandra?
No! But please, please don't throw all your dinner dishes till you've eaten what's on them. Now won't you just try to write, Father? Write anything. Write the cat sat on the mat. Anything, as long as you write.
Come on.
I shall let him out tonight, even if he kills us.
I'm not weakening yet. We'll see how he is after dinner.
When dusk is falling, Thomas lights a lantern, and we take the pyjamas and dressing gown over to the tower. A faint, reassuring smell of cigar smoke wafts up to us. When we open the trapdoor, Father is sitting at the table with his back to us.
Father?
Ah! Your brilliant idea's done the trick. I've begun.
Oh, how wonderful.
May we see what you've written?
Certainly not. You wouldn't understand a word of it, but I assure you, I've made a start. Now, let me out.
It's a ruse.
How many pages have you written, Father?
Well, not many. The light's been very bad down here for the last hour.
You'll be all right with the lantern. Here, I'll lower it.
Thomas! Thomas! I give you my word I have begun work. Look. Wait. Yes. Here, look. You can see for yourself. Now, hurry up with that ladder. I want to get back to the gatehouse and work all night.
But you're in an ideal place to work all night. Moving to the gatehouse would only disrupt you.
No.
Here, I brought along your pyjamas and a dressing gown.
No.
I'll come along early in the morning. No. Good night, Father.
Thomas!
We divide the night into watches, and the next day Father is writing each time we take him food. And finally, thank goodness I hear from Rose. She sends a telegram asking me to please try and understand. No mention of forgiving me, but as it is signed Your Ever-Loving Rose, I suppose she has. It is now 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm writing by moonlight. Even while I've been so worried about Father, a voice in my heart has kept saying, but nothing really matters but Simon. Oh, if only Rose will break off her engagement. Surely Simon will turn to me someday. There's actually a car on the God's End Road. Strange to watch the headlights and wonder who's driving through the night. It's coming on and on. I feel like someone keeping a journal to the last second of an approaching catastrophe. The catastrophe has happened. Simon and Topaz are getting out of the car.
Is Rose here?
Rose?
Oh, my God.
She's disappeared, Cassandra.
How can a girl just disappear?
She left a note for Simon, but it didn't really explain anything. We thought she might have come here to be with you, so we drove straight down.
Well, I had a telegram from her this afternoon. It didn't explain it, just said she'd write when she could, and would I please try and understand?
Where was the telegram handed in?
I'll get it from here, just there.
Well, fancy Mortmain sleeping through all this.
Here. Why, it's from that little seaside place where the four of us went for the picnic.
Why on earth would she go there? And why couldn't the silly ass explain in her note?
She explained all right. Thanks for trying to spare my feelings, Topaz, but it's really rather pointless.
It's just a fit of engagement nerves. She'll feel differently in a day or two. She's obviously gone to this place to think things out.
Topaz, would you be too tired to start again right away?
You mean go after her? Oh, Simon, are you sure that's wise? If she wants to be on her own for a bit...
You can talk to her first, but I must know a little more than I do now.
Well, let me just have a word with Mortmain.
It's no use going upstairs.
Is he in the gatehouse at this hour?
No. You see, Topaz...
What? What are you hiding from me?
Father's been in Belmont Dungeon for 2 days. We locked him in to make him work, and if we're to believe him, it's done the trick.
How dare you... What have you done? You killed him!
Well, he was alive and kicking last night, wasn't he, Thomas?
I've got the flashlight from my car.
Thomas, give me the key. I want to face it alone.
If you're not careful, you'll face it headfirst down 15 feet. Let Cassandra and me get the door open and the ladder fixed, and then you can descend like a ministering angel.
All right.
Father is lying on the bed, so utterly still that for a moment I'm terrified. Then a little curling snore relieves my mind.
Mortmain? Oh, dear. Mortmain, I've come to rescue you. It's Topaz. Mortmain. Oh, you're safe. Oh.
Hadn't you better leave them together for a while?
Yes, let her work on her worst histrionics.
In fact, I'll wait in my car.
Lean on me, Mortmain, lean on me.
Are you all right, Father?
My dear young jewellers, yes. I think I shall survive. If Topaz will stop treating me as if I were both the little princes in the tower.
Cassandra, cut back and see what he's written.
files of paper. This looks promising.
Oh, thrilling moment. Perhaps one day I shall be describing it in Ford's biography.
Section A. The cat sat on the mat. The cat sat on the mat. The cat sat on the mat.
On and on. Oh, Thomas, we've turned his brain.
Rubbish. You heard how sanely he was talking.
The cat bit the fat rat. It's like a second childhood.
This is better. He's growing up. This is his normal writing.
What is it?
He's been making up puzzles.
Turn to the end.
Investigates old copybooks, samplers, child's guide to knowledge, jigsaw puzzles, toys in the London Museum. Well, that's sane enough.
What's in section B?
Numbered sentences.
Oh, is it poetry?
It's beautifully written.
Oh. They're the clues to a crossword puzzle. He's just been amusing himself. I'm not going to read anymore.
Here, bring back that torch. There's something in all this. I'm positive.
Oh, Cassandra, I was just coming for you. Will you go with Simon? Then I can stay with Mortmain. I don't want him to know about Rose until he's recovered a bit. He doesn't even know that Simon's here.
Yes. Yes, of course I'll go.
And for goodness sake, try to make Rose see sense.
Did you know how Rose felt about me? Forget it. It's not fair to ask you.
Simon.
I believe I'd rather not talk about it at all. Not until I'm sure she really means it.
It is a queer feeling driving through the sleeping villages. Each time the car suddenly seems noisier, the headlights more brilliant. In one cottage, there's candlelight beyond the diamond panes of an upstairs window, and a car at the door.
Perhaps the doctor's there.
Somebody dying, or getting born, maybe.
Look at that golden haze just beginning behind the thick grey mist.
That is remarkable.
Can you feel the sea in the air?
Yes. But the mist over the salt marshes is too thick for the sun to penetrate.
It's like travelling through a tunnel in the clouds.
We don't see a soul in the main street of the village. But we find the front door of one hotel open and a charwoman scrubbing the hall. She lets us look at the hotel register. There's no sign of Rose's name. She tells us the only other place is a tiny inn down by the sea about a mile away, called the Swan.
It's somewhere to try until the village wakes up.
We drive along the lonely coast road. There's no mist over the sea. It's all pale, shimmering gold. So calm that the waves seem only just able to crawl onto the shore and spread a lacy film over the sands.
There it is, the Swan.
Look, that's where we had the barbecue, and Neil burnt the steaks.
I'll just pop in and check. Someone's awake. Listen, it's coming from that open window.
It's Rose.
Are you sure?
Certain.
I had no idea she could sing like that. Surely she couldn't sing like that if she wasn't happy.
Perhaps it was just nerves, as Topaz said. Shall I call up to her?
Good morning, fair Rose. Are you ready to come out and bathe?
That was Neil.
Yes, that was Neil.
But Simon, they hate each other.
Looks like it, doesn't it? I feel now as if I'd always known it.
How? How did you know?
He was really attracted to Rose at the beginning. And then he decided she was affected and mercenary. Or at least that's what he said. I kidded myself he was piqued because she preferred me. Just as I kidded myself she really cared for me. That is, I did at first.
She did. She did at first. Like she said in her note.
For weeks now I've had my doubts. Yeah, but I hoped things would come right after we were married. God knows I never had the remotest idea she was in love with Neil or Neil with her. They might have told me honestly.
We drive home through the full brightness of the morning. I've been telling myself I would make Simon happy. But I know now that I've been stuffing myself up with silly fairy talk, that I could never mean to him what Rose means. With all my heart, and for my heart's ease as well as his, I would give her back to him if I could. And now it is October. I write this sitting on the mound, near the circle of stones left from the Midsummer Rites. Rose and Neil went to his ranch in California. She writes and tells me she is perfectly happy. There are 3 bathrooms. I only saw her once before she went, at the Cottons.
It was Stephen who made it all happen.
But how?
He went to Neil's hotel and told him I wasn't in love with Simon.
Then Neil came to see you?
Yes. Oh, Cass, I'd have married him if he hadn't a penny. And I would weeks ago, if only he'd have given me the chance. You see, I didn't know that he cared for me.
But Rose, how did Stephen know?
Oh, well, do you remember that night they mistook me for a bear, when I slapped Neil's face? After he carried me across the railway line, he set me down and he said, "This is for slapping me," and then he kissed me. And Stephen saw.
But just because he saw Neil kiss you once...
No, he knew better than I did, because Neil wasn't ever nice to me again. He was just rude and horrid.
I always thought you both made too much of not liking each other.
We hoped to get married at once, but you can't do that, so we went down to the inn to wait until we could. Neil said that barbecue picnic was the last time he'd seen me human. And of course, darling, it's really you I have to thank, because I'm sure Stephen only went to Neil on your account. He told Neil that you're the one for Simon. Just as soon as Simon's got over me a bit, you'll be able to get him.
I should have thought you'd grown out of talking about getting men.
Oh, I didn't mean it in that way. Oh, he likes you so much already. He said so only today.
Rose, you didn't tell him I was in love with him.
Of course not.
I'm afraid she did. He's been so kind since then, but now his kindness seems deliberate. He's been coming here to talk to Father about his book nearly every day. Apparently, it is very clever to start a book with "The cat sat on the mat 19 times. Now, stop it, Cassandra Mortmain. In the revised version, there are only 7 of them. And there is a perfectly logical explanation, according to that bright boy Thomas. They are supposed to be in the mind of a child learning to read and write. Topaz is always delighted to air her views, but her latest contributions are cosmic significance and spherical profundity. The only person who could help me is Simon. But I don't like to ask him in case he thinks I'm running after him.
Cassandra, I need to say goodbye. I'm taking Mother back to America at the end of the week.
Oh.
She wants to be in New York for the winter, and I'd like to be there when the first section of your father's work is printed in The New Yorker. I'll write an article about it.
Simon, could you tell me anything that would help me to understand what he's driving at?
Yes, I want to, because when I'm gone, you'll be the one person in close touch with him who's capable of understanding.
Father won't answer my questions.
Well, it's the essence of an enigma, that one must solve it for oneself.
Why does his work have to be an enigma at all?
God made the universe an enigma.
And very confusing it's been for everybody. I don't see why Father has to copy him.
I think your father believes the interest so many people take in puzzles and problems, which often start in childhood, may derive from man's eternal curiosity about his origin. Think of a crossword puzzle, of the hundreds of images that pass through the mind while solving one. In your father's puzzles, the sum total of the images adds up to the meaning he wants to convey, and the sum total of all the sections of the book, all the puzzles, problems, patterns, progressions, I believe there is even going to be a detective section, will add up to his philosophy of search creation.
Why can't he say what he means plainly?
Because there's so much that just can't be said plainly. Try describing what beauty is, plainly, and you'll see what I mean.
All right. Maybe I understand. Do you think that locking him in the tower really got him going again?
It's more likely that everything worked together. Our coming here, talking to Mother, reading at Scotney. He certainly hands you full credit for telling him to write "The cat sat on the mat."
I think losing his temper may have helped him the most.
What's his temper like nowadays?
Most of the time he's nicer than I ever remember. But in spasms, the temper is terrific. Topaz is adoring life.
Dear Topaz, she's the perfect wife for him now he's working, and he knows it. But I don't see how life at the castle can be much fun for you this winter. Are you sure you don't want to go to college?
Quite sure. I only want to write, and there's no college for that except life.
Well, you must write to me for anything you want. Anyway, I shall be back soon.
I wonder.
What do you mean?
I just wondered if America might claim you.
I shall come back, all right. I could never desert Skotny. I wish I could take you to America with me. Would you like to come? Would you? Cassandra?
If only I could type, I could come as your secretary. Though I don't know that I'd care to be away from Father too long this year.
A wise young judge.
Simon, you know I'd love to see America if ever the circumstances were, well, favourable.
I'll report on them when I come back. Let me kiss your hand.
And then he goes quickly down the mound. I know that when he nearly asked me to marry him, it was only an impulse. Just as it was when he kissed me on Midsummer Eve. A mixture of liking me very much and longing for Rose. It's part of a follow-my-leader game of second best we've all been playing. Rose with Simon. Simon with me. Me with Stephen. And Stephen, I suppose, with that detestable leader fox. It isn't a very good game. The people you play it with are apt to get hurt. There's only half a page left in my journal, but that is as much as I shall need. I've grown out of wanting to write about myself. Shall I fill the space with I love you? I love you. Like Father's page of cats on the mat. No. Even a broken heart doesn't warrant a waste of good paper. There's a light down in the castle kitchen. Tonight, I shall have my bath in front of the fire with Simon's gramophone playing. Topaz has it on now, too loud, to bring Father back to Earth in time for tea. The music seems to say, what shall I do? Where shall I go? You will go into tea, my girl, and a much better tea than you would have come by this time last year. A mist is rolling over the fields. There was a mist on Midsummer Eve. Mist when we drove into the dawn. He said he would come back. Only the margin left to write on now. I love you. I love you. I love you.
In I Capture the Castle, Cassandra was played by Holiday Granger, Rose by Scarlett Alice Johnson, Mortmain by Toby Jones, and Topaz by Charlotte Emerson. Simon was played by John McMillan, Neil by Henry DeVas, Stephen by Harry McIntyre, and Thomas by Sam Hattersley. Dodie Smith's I Capture the Castle was dramatised by Jane Rogers and directed in Salford by Nadia Molinari.